Monster Man, episode 474. Monsters of Alcadim introduction. Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm taking a look at the monsters that I find in them, their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. In today's episode, we are beginning a whole new season of Monster Man. In previous seasons, we've looked at monster books that were core or additional to the various editions of AD&D or D&D. This is our first time looking in depth at a monster book for a specific setting. That being the case, I thought we would take this first episode to talk a little bit about the setting and what, in short, its deal is. So, the winner of the patron poll for the next season was the Monstrous Compendium Appendix for Alcadim. So let's talk a little bit about what Alcadim was. Published in 1992, Alcadim was a pretty small setting for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 2nd Edition. It consisted of this book, Alcadim Arabian Adventures, which is kind of the main book for the type of play that was going to happen in this setting, and then Alcadim Land of Fate, which was the setting boxed set, plus a number of scenarios and other like little bits of setting expansion. But compared to some of the larger AD&D settings, I don't think it was that huge. I don't have the numbers though, so I could turn out to be wrong. Alcadim was the brainchild of longtime TSR designer Jeff Grubb, as well as Andrea Hayday, about whom I don't know very much. It was released in the same year as Disney's Aladdin, which must have done something for the kind of general public interest in Arabian Nights style adventure, but I don't know if that's a coincidence. I assume it is, since I assume a D&D box set gets made on a much shorter time scale than a hand-drawn animated film. The subtitle of the main book, Alcadim Arabian Adventures, should remind you of Oriental Psy adventures. And this is what it is to some extent: new rules for a fantasy Arabian-inspired setting, and in particular a lot of different character kits, which were a big thing in 2nd edition. Now, I'm not going to get into the kits. There are a lot of them. They're complicated. I don't really understand 2nd edition rules all that well, and plenty has been written about them if you want to check it out. It's not what we do on this show. But let's take a quick look at the setting in order to establish where these monsters that we're looking at are going to live. The name Alcadim comes from an Arabic word that means the ancient, and that is not the name of the setting, even though I always sort of assume that it is. The land where Alcadim is set is the land of Zakara. It's a region of the world of Toril, which is the world of the Forgotten Realms setting. But my understanding is that Alcadim was designed not to be too Forgotten Realms-y, so that DMs who were not running Forgotten Realms games would still get something out of the setting material, be able to take it and put it into their own worlds. So there aren't a lot of close connections between Alcadim and kind of the core Forgotten Realms books, or Alcadim and the Forgotten Realms Oriental Psy Adventures setting Karatur. I believe there are some, but Alcadim is pretty self-contained, and you could run a game set in Zakara without really referring too much to the rest of Toril. Zakara is a little different from the typical D&D setting in a number of interesting ways. So one key difference is that humanoid quote-unquote races are not different societies. Instead, they function a little bit more like ethnicities within a shared culture. So, for instance, you might get humans, halflings, dwarves, and so on, all as part of the society of a Zakaran city. Within that racial or species mixture, there is then some conflict between societies or differing ideologies within society. One of the major conflicts being between the sedentary cosmopolitan city dwellers and the ascetic nomad peoples. This tension between urbanites and nomads is a major one in the setting, and one that crops up in medieval Islamic history and literature as well. Now, the introduction to the Arabian Adventures book sets the stall out pretty clearly. It says that this setting is inspired by three things. First, the historical Islamic world. The book doesn't always use the words Arabic or Islamic very consistently. Typically it says Arabic, but actually a lot of the time they're talking about peoples who are not Arabic. So some of these things are like Persian or Turkic. So never mind that. But I'm going to say Islamic. That has its limitations as well. But, you know, obviously these characters are not Islamic. They're polytheists of a D&D fantasy type, although they have their own specific brand based on the teachings of the lore giver, the lore keeper, whatever she's called, who is essentially the settings equivalent of the Prophet Muhammad. So as I say, the first inspiration is the historical Islamic world. The second is the myths and legends of the Islamic world, and in particular, the stories of the Thousand Nights and a Night, what we often call the Arabian Nights. And then finally, the Hollywood Arabian Nights. So movies like Aladdin that I mentioned earlier, or The Seventh Voyage of Sinbad, or The Thief of Baghdad, or whatever. And the introduction clearly says, you know, these are things that are not historically accurate. We are trying to evoke a genre of fantasy here, which, you know, is fair enough. Although what that means is that in some ways Al-Qadim is going to have the flaws of its source material. So let's talk a little bit about that source material. In particular, let's take a look at the Arabian Nights. Except there isn't such a thing as the Arabian Nights, or perhaps it would be better for me to say that there isn't such a thing as the Arabian Nights. The term Arabian Nights is introduced in a translation into English, and of course it's not called the Arabian Nights when it's in Arabic. I mean, they're all Arabian Nights, but there are various compilations of folk tales that go by this title, The Thousand Nights and a Night. Not only the translations, but the actual contents are different. To give you just one example, when you think of the Arabian Nights, unless you've learned something about the history of this text, you probably think that the most famous stories from the Arabian Nights are the tales of Aladdin and Ali Baba. When there was that Arabian Nights TV series back in the 90s, Aladdin was, you know, kind of one of the main things. But those stories are not present in the original Arabian Nights manuscript tradition. They are modern additions added by a French folklorist. They are stories that were being told, in this case by Syrian Maronites, but they are not part of the same collection as the story of, say, the fisherman Abdullah and the merman Abdullah. The other story that we probably think of when we think of the Arabian Nights is the story of Sinbad the Sailor, but that's also not part of the Arabian Nights manuscript tradition. That is a different manuscript tradition that gets bundled with the Arabian Nights in most English translations. Now, I don't read Arabic, so the fact of the matter is that I'm going to be relying on these English translations, but it is always important to remember when you're dealing with these texts that these are selections and they're particular interpretations. And in some cases, the translator has put a particularly heavy dose of their own perspective into the text. And that's something that, again, if you, like me, can't read the original language and don't want to stump up the money required for expensive scholarly translations, you know, you're just stuck with the translations that are available to the English reading market, and that's fine. You just have to be aware of that fact. You cannot assume that this thing that you've read in a translation represents the whole tradition of the text. And very few of these translations are complete because, as the name implies, The Thousand Nights and a Night is really long. Something worth remembering there. So one critique of Al-Qadim that has been leveled in the past is that it indulges in Orientalism. Not to defend Al-Qadim, I don't know if this is Orientalism as defined by Edward Said, but we can talk about it. So this idea of Orientalism was expounded in the 1970s by the Palestinian-American scholar Edward Said, and it refers to a particular way of thinking, typically by Europeans, about the civilizations of North Africa, the Middle East, and Asia, perceiving them as kind of timeless and unchanging, creating an artificial division between the civilizations of the West and the East, even though, in fact, you know, they're a continuum. They have long histories of contact and exchange with each other, etc., etc., but perceiving them as other somehow. So the rules that govern the economies or the societies or whatever of the West don't apply in the East because ... And this view, this reduction of these cultures to kind of ahistorical stereotypes, allowed them to be used as a contrast to European society. And Said was particularly concerned about the contrasts where the kind of like backwardness and superstition or whatever of Middle Eastern civilizations was contrasted to the progress and rationality of European civilizations in a way that was understood as a justification for European colonialism. Now, is this something that we can apply to Al-Qadim itself, given that Al-Qadim is not an attempt to represent a historical culture, but to present a fantastic culture inspired to some extent by that historical culture? I mean, yes and no. Perhaps not literally. Al-Qadim is a creative work. It's not intended as a way of analyzing real societies, but fantasy societies are kind of a way of thinking about real societies. There's like a little bit of overlap, right? When we create a fantasy world that's based on an idealized Middle Ages of castles with spires from which pennons flutter and knights in shining armor, or alternatively, of filthy hovels and taverns full of beggars and people getting knifed, we are saying something about how we think about the Middle Ages. And even if we understand that that's not reality, I do think that these things have some influence over the way people think about historical periods. I know for a fact that people think about the early Middle Ages in ways that are influenced by the Last Kingdom and by Vikings and what have you. So it's not there to some extent. And Al-Qadim does to some extent replicate certain stereotypes about quote-unquote exotic societies, although I don't think it intends to present a negative portrayal of these cultures. Now, maybe it does in some cases, but I don't think that's what it's intending to do. I think it's trying to present them sympathetically and, you know, it's succeeding in some cases and failing in others, and in others kind of making a, you know, a bit of a ham-fisted job of it. But when you're talking about an exotic land of scimitars, sultans, and genies, and when you're basing some of what you got on the Seventh Voyage of Sinbad or Disney's Aladdin, then yeah, you know, you're gonna have some of the stereotypes that exist in your source material cropping up. And for that matter, that's kind of what you want. You want harems full of gauzy curtains blowing in the breeze and quiet cities asleep under the sun while the call to prayer rings out from the minarets. And you want long caravans of camels passing by under the baking desert sun. And for that matter, long caravans of camels did pass by under the baking desert sun. But I mean, like, there's a section on honor killings in this book. I'm just saying. Now, I don't intend to provide a full discussion of this topic. I'm not an expert on it. My familiarity with the medieval Middle East, although it's been improving over the last few years, is still only passing. And perhaps most importantly, I think of all the parts of Al-Qadim where these stereotypes are likely to come up, the Monsters book may be the least. So I don't know how much any of this is going to come up in the bestiary per se, but I think it's something that you can't talk about Al-Qadim and not address, at least to some extent. And it may, you know, maybe it'll come up, right? I don't know. I haven't read it either. So I have read some writing about this book, and there are some common comments, but I don't want to kind of lay them out at the beginning of this season because I'm interested to see whether my experience of the book matches them or not. So I'm going to try to put all that stuff to one side and go into Monsters Compendium Appendix Al-Qadim with as blank a slate as possible, as open a mind as I can. And we're going to get in there, and we're going to compare things to The Thousand Nights and a Night, or Zakaria Al-Qazwini's The Wonders of Creation, which I assume there's going to be some of in there. We may talk a little bit about monsters that aren't in there, like monsters that if you were doing an Arabian Nights-style campaign, what would you include? Probably things that are in the main Monsters Compendium, Ants, Comma, Giant, and whatnot. But we'll see how it all goes. I am dropping into a setting that I don't know very much about. I have the Arabian Adventures book, which I can check. I don't have Land of Fate yet, but it is on drive-thru and it is like $10, so I probably will pick it up. And I'm excited, you know, the last book, there was a lot of retreading, a lot of going back over familiar territory, and I think that's likely to not be the case here. So I am excited. And I hope that you're excited too, and that you will join me next time as we take a look at our very first Zakharin Monsters, right here on Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you've got a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, why not get in touch? I'm on Twitter as @GonzoHistory, on Mastodon as GonzoHistory@dice.camp, or you can find me on Instagram at MonsterManGonzo, or drop me an email, GonzoHistory@gmail.com. Our theme music is an extract from Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster and is used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Our cover art is by Ray Otis. Thanks for listening, and please join me next time for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great.